Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. If you think you know the story behind Superman, think again. On this episode of Ira's Everything Bagel, I sit down with award-winning author and legal mind William Bernhardt. His book, The Superman Wars, uncovers the untold story of two young creators, Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster, whose iconic creation became a global symbol of hope, while they themselves were left fighting for recognition, rights, and justice. We'll talk about the legal battles that changed creator rights forever, the historical forces that gave rise to Superman in the first place, and why the story still matters, especially today in a world where content is everywhere, but ownership isn't always clear. The Superman War is a battle for truth, justice, and an American icon. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And for anything about William, go to williambernhardt.com, williambernhardt.com. Follow him on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And William, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So you're an award-winning author with more than 60 books to your credit. And we were talking before the show. It's amazing the output that you have. And they're all in Pig Latin, which is incredible how you can do that. I made that part up. No, it's still just it's great. And people can look up. There's thriller, legal thrillers series, Daniel Pike and Ben Kincaid novels. And just keep going. And you're the founder of WriterCom, which we can talk about if we have some time as well.
Oh, yeah, I'm good.
That doesn't keep disappearing into the bagels, but we can do that as well. So, Superman,
I didn't realize those are bagels behind you. I thought it was like maybe a Hedges or something. Now I get it.
And that's why it's called Ira's Everything Bagel.
Right.
So there you have it. So the what got you started in the world of Superman? Why did you decide to tackle this subject?
Well, I'm a comic book fan from way back, but I didn't know that much. I knew a little bit. I knew there was a lot of controversy concerning Superman's creators, but I really started looking at it when I was researching my last novel, which was called Justice for All, and ends up diving into this whole art versus commerce conflict. And I started reading about what happened to Jerry Siegel and his partner, Joe Shuster, who was the artist, and, was simultaneously kind of shocked and appalled. Plus, there's 70 years of litigation. And I thought, what takes 70 years to figure out? And I couldn't really find a great explanation of it. I think sometimes people who, you know, haven't been to law school and been through all that have trouble reading the motions and the pleadings and appeals. And wait, now it's back in the trial court. What's going on? I get it. It's hard for some people to figure out. So I thought this is something I could do. And that led me into learning. I didn't want it to be just about lawsuits. That'd be boring. You got to know the people involved. So I decided to focus on the writer, Jerry Siegel, not in any way casting shade on his partner, Joe, the artist, but I'm a writer. You know, I get writers. I understand writers. I can relate to a lot of Jerry Siegel's story. So I decided to tell this, you know, never-ending battle about the rights to Superman through the lens of Jerry Siegel. And that turned out to be the Superman Wars.
How did you research this? I'm sure I understand from a legal standpoint, you have access to all the case histories and right, pleadings and all of that. That I understand, but I'm sure you went beyond that and got additional research. How are you able to do that? Are there libraries dedicated to the subject?
Not entirely, but I do want to make it.
Yeah, collection.
There are a lot of useful things. I do want to make it clear. This book isn't just about the lawsuits. That's, you know, a few chapters, but let's face it, that'd be boring. No, the research probably ended up taking three times what I thought it was going to be. And I ended up traveling to eight different states to either talk to people or look at library collections. I ended up interviewing more than 50 people, some of whom have never spoken on the record before, and also went through all kinds of books, magazines, periodicals, a lot of you know, fanzines, amateur fan-produced publications, or comic-based magazines from many years ago have preserved a lot of history because they interviewed some of these people while they were still alive, but that material is pretty hard to find. Though I found it. You don't have to look now. It's all in the book. the Superman Wars. Some of it was just eye-popping, though. There's stuff in here that's never appeared anywhere before.
We all grew up with Superman, I think, it's fair to say. And so I think that's part of why your book resonates. The subject that here are the original artists, and I'll use that as a generic term, meaning writers and the artist who drew it, but they're both artists in my opinion. But they never got their due because of what? It was a sign of the times, the way the contracts were drawn at the time. And why did it take all these decades of litigation?
Yes. Well, I mean, first it has to be said that Jerry and Joe were young and inexperienced. I mean, Jerry came up with this idea when he was in the 11th grade, for Pete's sake, and ran across town to get his best friend Joe to draw it for him. And then he spent years aggressively trying to market it. Jerry's idea was he wanted a newspaper strip. Because at this time, in the middle of the Depression, the mid-30s, newspaper strips were a big deal, and they could be very profitable. Comic books just launched in 35, and at this point were considered kind of scruffy, low-class, you know, not nearly as prestigious. And so Jerry spent years trying to get a newspaper strip, and it was only after he'd exhausted every syndicate out there that he considered publishing with a comic book publisher that he knew, because he'd done other work for this guy. He's named Major Nicholson. He was a writer also, and he was a fascinating character. And that's who Jerry thought he was getting into bed with, because he trusted the Major. Unfortunately, just, you know, like a heartbeat before Superman debuts, the company is taken over by a guy named Harry Donenfeld and his partner, Jack Liebowitz. Donenfeld had a history of mob connections. He was rum running during Prohibition. He'd been indicted twice for pornography, and he was looking for something safer he could publish. And that's why he took over the comic book company. He didn't know anything about Superman or any of this stuff, but, you know, less than a year before Superman debuts, he's a millionaire. Jerry and Joe, unfortunately, are not, because they've signed away their, in order to get it published. One of the clauses in that initial letter agreement said that they surrendered the rights to all the characters. So, yeah, they got in print, and Superman was a huge hit, but they lost control.
Is there something to be said for, if you're clear-headed about it, if you are those two guys, you're immortal in a way, you're famous forever because you're associated with the creation of Superman. Is it worth it in some cases to give up control, to give up money, to give up rights in exchange for that fame?
Well, that's a question for every individual. I mean, I would say no, but I don't believe this is the only way Jerry could have gotten it published. I think there are a lot of comic book publishers that could have done just as good a job with it. He just didn't end up there. And unfortunately, you know, Jerry lost his father when he was 17. He had no one to advise him, no one with any business experience. Joe's dad was an elevator operator at a nearby hospital. So they were kind of on their own. They were on their own. They didn't have an agent. They didn't have a lawyer. I wish they had. The whole history of comic books might have been different if they had, but they didn't. And of course, they did make some money in the early days, good money, given that it was the Depression and whatnot, but less than 10 years later, they've not only been fired, their names were stripped from the Superman feature. And, I don't think any amount of money would have ever caused Jerry Siegel to agree to that. He was proud of what he had done, and taking his name on it was just heartbreaking and, I think, fundamentally immoral. You know, we can argue about the legal aspects, but stripping somebody's name off their own creation, that is just wrong.
Well, does he, because I was aware of both of their names many years ago. So clearly, despite their names being stripped from the record, they remained in the public consciousness.
Not so much. Between, I would say, 48 and 75, I bet there are a few people who had any idea who Superman's creators were or what they were doing at this time.
Yes, I'm the exception to the rule because I just knew of the two guys. But
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what was the most surprising thing you found in your research? There may be many things, but maybe if you had one or two that surprised you in your research and in talking with people about this, not just about the two guys, but really why it was in litigation what seems to be an entire century. I mean, it's like, I'm exaggerating, of course, but still, why was it tied up that long in litigation?
Well, part of it is because the copyright laws kept changing. A new act was passed in the late 1970s, which gave creators the ability to recover their rights, even if they've been assigned, after 50 years. Well, that's, you know, I would have made it less than 50 years, but whatever, that's the way it should be. And that's what gave an additional breath to the lawsuits. A lot of people remember what happened in 75 when Siegel and Shuster got a small piece of PR because people were fighting to get them pensions. Mm-hmm. And the comic book company, which had been pretty unsympathetic up to that point, suddenly became sympathetic because the Christopher Reeve movie was being made, the first Superman movie, and they didn't want any bad PR. So they ended up giving, you know, this is after decades of these guys living in poverty or on the brink of it, finally give them a small $20,000 pension, which is nice. But let me tell you, that is not the end of the story at all. If that's all you know, you don't know the story because there's 50 years more of stuff. And that's just the moment when the worm starts to turn in Jerry and Joe's favor a little bit, but it is far from the end of the story.
When you were researching and you were talking to people, going to various collectors and libraries where they had collections and you could research some of it, I know I asked you earlier if there was a library dedicated to that, and clearly there's not, but then I started to think about that, and maybe there should be because of this amount of material.
You know, there is technically a thing called the Superman Museum, which is in, get this, Metropolis, Illinois, the only city in America that's actually named Metropolis. But that's more a stuff museum, you know, artifacts and whatnot. There's no central Superman library, although the Cleveland Public Library, which I went to, and a wonderful man named Don Boozer helped me out with that collection, and they've got a lot of great stuff. Cleveland is a city where Jerry and Joe both lived and grew up, and so it's sort of Superman's hometown. They've now got a Siegel and Shuster Plaza that was just dedicated last year with statues of the guys, and that was very nice.
Did you find that there was support for Jerry and Joe from certain pockets of, I'll call it the industry, I don't know what else to call it, but whether it was comic books or it was television or it was movies, because again, there's the Superman TV series with Reeves.
Right. Going back. Where Jerry's name does not appear at any time.
Right. So was there support from any of those quarters for the guys during this whole long run of litigation?
Not initially at all. In fact, in 1951, I'll say, Jerry started a letter writing campaign. And some of his letters, to be fair, are way out there. He is clearly not in a good way. You know, he's really upset about this. But he thought that the whole creative community would rise up and support him, and they did not. To the contrary, major figures like Jack Kirby, Joe Simon, wrote letters to the comic company saying, "We just want you to know we're not a part of this." It was only, like I said, about 1975 when Neil Adams, a great comic artist, and Jerry Robinson, who had been in the business since the early days, he was one of the early people to work on Batman, and in fact co-created the Joker and Alfred and other figures, and he understood that this was just wrong. And together they mounted a PR campaign, you know, get these guys on enough TV shows and enough newspapers. And that's what led to the small kind of stop yakking already. Here's a small pension kind of stuff. To be fair, it got better in later years. Right. There were cost of living bumps, but
still, I mean, the amount
of token.
Yeah. The amount of money that was generated and they're not getting a decent amount from
this
it.
This is the character that now makes Warner Brothers about $450 million on average every year. Yeah. You'd think they could find something for the creators.
Yeah, and it has changed, and I want to talk to you about that in a minute. Were there pockets of support? You know, I mentioned a moment ago, and you just talked about people that you think would support them and didn't. But were there pockets of support from fans who remembered their names from the early days? That
it's all about the fans, and that's a point I try to make in the book. That, you know, we talked today about standing up to power. Well, who did? Jerry did. He's the first American author to sue his publisher. And the reason that this finally happens, that this pension finally happens in 75, is totally because of the fans. Jerry wrote this, he called it a press release. It goes on for more than 9 pages. It's like a long rant, although everything in it turns out to be true. The references to letters and whatnot all turn out to be accurate. But he sends this huge press release to 1,000 different media outlets. Newspapers aren't interested, radio, television, not interested. Ultimately, it's not the courts, it's not lawyers, it's not corporate America that helps them out. It's fans. Because by the 70s, this group of comic book collectors, grown-ups who take this seriously and appreciate the artists behind these characters, thought that this was wrong. And that's where stories about Jerry and Joe first start appearing in fanzines. Mm-hmm. And eventually that gets picked up by the mainstream press. And eventually from there, it goes to television appearances, which ultimately leads Christmas of 75 to them getting these small pensions. They did not, however, get any piece of Superman, not even a seat at the table to talk about Superman.
Were they required, based on your research, were they required in order to get these minuscule pensions, were they required to sign a piece of paper that once again gave away any other claims or rights to their product?
Existing at that time, yes, totally. They also agreed to, you know, stop complaining about the fact that they didn't control Superman, which I have to say, Jerry did not do at all. He just could not help himself. He thought,
It's his life.
Fundamentally wrong.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. He creates something that grabs the American imagination and other countries, I'm sure, as well, but mainly in America, grabs the imagination of American kids initially, and those kids grow up and they're still fans of Superman. You mentioned the litigation. Mm-hmm. Did the lawyers who represented Jerry and Joe, and by the way, were Jerry and Joe on the same page about all this?
Yes, although Joe was a much quieter, more gentle person, that's why Jerry was in effect, their agent. He was the one who sent the letters and tried to get the deals, and then he'd bring them to Joe, and Joe would sign it. And it's the same thing here. Had it been left to Joe, Joe probably would have worked quietly for not very much money, but he would have had a job and would have been perhaps happy with that, but Jerry wasn't. Jerry was the one who always fought and could always, reluctantly get Joe to join in whatever the next lawsuit or whatever was going to be.
He was a spark plug of the duo.
He was.
Yeah.
But that's the only reason we know who Superman is today.
Oh, yeah. No, it makes sense. Well, when Jerry's lawyers sued, were the lawyers, how I can phrase this. Were they
was working? Totally outlawed. Is that what you're going for?
No, not at all. I'm glad I didn't reveal my hand to you.
Okay.
But no, were they working? I mean, Jerry was not rich and Joe was not rich. So were they working on contingency basis? Did they have to pay their lawyers a lot of money to fight this?
No, they had to pay their lawyers a lot, and that becomes a big part of the negative outcome, if you will. Just to give you a thumbnail of this, and it's all in the book, but Jerry's drafted in 43, so he has to go overseas to fight in World War II. He actually worked as a journalist most of the time, just as well. I don't think we wanted Jerry on the front lines. He was best off as a writer. But while he was gone and couldn't do anything about it, the company basically took control of the whole Superman operation, including Joe, who they clearly tried to court and win over because he was separated from his pal for a little while. Sure. Plus, they take a script that Jerry had submitted that they rejected multiple times for a new character that would be called Superboy, which would be the adventures when he was younger and he'd use his powers to play pranks on people and lived in small town. It was more of a rural life. And they rejected it. Well, they ended up running it while Jerry was gone, even though they didn't own it. They hadn't paid for it. They had no right to do it, but they run it and it becomes a big hit. So Jerry comes home and finds, for one thing, he's got massive debt that his wife has incurred while he was gone. And meanwhile, these guys are making millions every year off his creation, and he's just had enough. So he sues, of course, over the Superboy matter,
right?
But also tries to get back Superman. He's successful on Superboy, but not on Superman, because like it or not, he signed that piece of paper.
Right.
And he ends up settling the Superboy part because he's so desperate. He owes $22,000 in back taxes. He owes $20,000 to lawyers and another $10,000 to an advisor named Albert Zugsmith. So he's in panic mode and ends up, he shouldn't have settled. He should have taken it to some other publisher and said, hey, you want a Superboy? But instead, he paid his debts, but
this is depressing.
It wasn't the right decision.
This is very depressing. Yeah. The book, again, is called The Superman Wars, A Battle for Truth, Justice, and an American Icon.
But isn't ultimately depressing, I have to say, there's going to be a happier ending at the end.
Excellent.
I'll save that.
So the, there goes my hat again. When you talk to people, well, I don't think there would be any people that are still around from when Jerry and Joe created Superman, right? It was too far back in time.
No, that's, almost 90 years now.
Right. I mean, if anything, there might be one person who's 100 years old that might remember something. So you had to go to other sources in addition to the written material that you found and the art that you found. How did you decide, or how did you plan your research in terms of talking with people? Were they mainly collectors? We talked about the collectors earlier on, and obviously you went to the libraries. But how did you determine who to talk to about this subject?
Well, it wasn't really hard. If you could find somebody who's still living and knew these guys, that's somebody who talked to.
Right.
How
did you know who they talked to? I guess as
well, by doing the research, the names start to emerge. Superman's got a long history. Jerry, of course, passed away in the 1990s, but his daughter, Laura, is still with us. And, I really wanted to get her to talk. She has not talked on the record to people who wrote books in the past. In fact, and it took me months just to connect. And the first email I got back from her started, "I don't give interviews." And I thought, oh, well, this is off to a good start, isn't it? But I kept working and saying, well, could you fact check? Could you answer some questions? And, she ended up actually giving me a lot of information. Plus, I talked to her sons, Jerry's grandsons, who have also not spoken on the record before. So that was a real plus.
So they felt that they could trust you after a while.
I guess so, or maybe they just didn't want somebody writing a book about their dad and granddad without having some input in it. They didn't talk about litigation matters, and I understand that. It's probably all triple-locked with NDAs and that kind of stuff. But wonderful stories, just to give you an example. Jerry ends up meeting Laura's mother, obviously, Joanne Siegel, who was the original model Joe hired to pose for Lois Lane. Because he wondered, what's a woman look like when she's been carried through the air and stuff like that. So he got a model. And And 13 years later, Jerry, who of course was the model for Clark Kent, the guy with the spectacles and the stuttering, nervous guy who's not popular with women, they meet again at a cartoonist ball and fall in love. And so the model for Clark Kent ends up marrying the model for Lois Lane.
Great story.
And their daughter grows up to become a reporter, an award-winning reporter many times over. I mean, how perfect is that?
Yeah. That's
couldn't have made that up.
No, I know. That almost sounds like it's designed for a book that it actually didn't happen in real life, but it clearly did.
Yeah.
You of course, went through all the legal, because that's your background, you went through all the legal machinations and Were you surprised with your background?
Yeah, I'm surprised that, somebody didn't do more for their creators. I mean, I talked about the people who are in control of this company in the early days, and it's not the way you'd run a company now. In 1976, for the first time, Jeanette Kahn, somebody with actual college education and business experience, takes over DC Comics. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it becomes a whole different company, run much more, you know, along the lines of where you think a company full of creatives should be run. I wish they could still do more for their creatives, but it's way better than it used to be. And I think she and Paul Levitz, who worked directly under her, were very good. Not suggesting that they're throwing money around, but they treated Jerry and Joe with respect. And that was an important change of pace. Plus, along the lines, Warner Brothers is part of the same corporate family, and Warner Brothers is controlling DC Comics. So Warner's could handle all the litigation, which left Jeanette and Paul and others at the comic book company free to be nicer to these two guys, even when there were lawsuits pending.
Amazing story. Before I let you go, what's the one thing you'd like people to take away from reading your book? Again, it's called The Superman Wars, A Battle for Truth, Justice, and an American Icon.
Well, for one thing, it to me emphasizes the importance of family, because sure, it didn't happen overnight and it didn't happen easily. But the only reason we know who these guys are now, and the only reason that there is a decent agreement now with the family, is because they stood up and fought as a family. They stuck together. You know, not others did. The Schuster family did not handle it this well. That's covered in the book. But it does detail to me the importance of family. In the early days, Jerry has nobody to talk to. Later, he has his wife, who becomes, in effect, the agent for Jerry and Joe. And when she passes, Laura takes over the litigation. This is a family that's stuck together. And that's why today, if you look in any comic book with Superman in it, it will say Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Schuster by special arrangement with the Jerry Siegel family.
Excellent. Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been William Bernhardt. He's author of The Superman Wars, A Battle for Truth, Justice, and an American Icon. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And for everything about William, you can go to williambernhardt.com, and you can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And William, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thanks. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.